This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network. Visit jabberjawmedia.com for more shows like this one.
Today's show is sponsored by Score Big. Next time you go see any game or show, go to Score Big first and see how much you can save. Download the new Score Big app for your iPhone or head over to scorebig.com and enter promo code BADCHRISTIAN to save $20 off your first ticket purchase. That's scorebig.com, promo code BADCHRISTIAN.
And today's show is also sponsored by Tracker. Make losing things a thing of the past. Pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to anything, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. Go to thetracker.com right now and enter promo code BADCHRISTIAN to get 30% off your entire order.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
3, 2, 1. I said, Joey, can you drop some bass? Said, Joey, can you drop some bass? Said, Joey, can you drop some bass? Said, Joey, can you drop some? My name is Toby. It's the Bad Christian Podcast. Gonna have a lot of fun, yeah. It's the Bad Christian Podcast.
How's your penis going, Toby?
Matt said this the other day. I heard him talking to somebody about how no matter what, I'll break. Like, yes. If there's an awkward silence, I will break first. So I didn't just then. Mm-hmm. Joey did. I was like, no matter what, there's nobody saying anything. I'm gonna sit in silence until somebody talks. So
you just waited that out there. Yeah, it's almost never me.
And I'm gonna do it right now.
Come on, guys, you're killing me. I can't take it. No, but that's part of my philosophy on that. I was telling Dave the other day that essentially, and this is something I noticed when I had taken edible cannabis, is I noticed that I became socially uncomfortable and was worried that I felt more socially uncomfortable with people. And so I realized that.
The hell is edible cannabis?
But so what I realized is that there's always somebody who is the most uncomfortable person in a situation. And my thought is that no matter what, as long as that's not you, it'll be somebody else. So if the most uncomfortable person in the situation decided not to be that person, then somebody else therefore would become uncomfortable, essentially. So like when we're standing around in a group, me, Dave, Toby, Josh, and somebody comes up and goes, hey, you, and it's a dorky looking stranger, and they come and say, hey, you guys are in a band, or tell me about it, or something, or just ask some question that nobody really wants to talk to this person, or whatever. Toby will always cave first and talk to them and say, oh, yeah, actually, and he's hating life, and he's talking to this person, somebody at the mall, not even a fan or anything. And it's just he's having to carry on this conversation with a stranger who's really interested, and he's not. But I know that I would sit there for another 5 or 6 seconds and not answer at all before, and I know somebody else is going to pipe up and do the diffusion of the uncomfortable situation. But if Toby didn't do that, all of a sudden, Dave or Josh most likely would go, oh, yeah, hey, man, and he would engage with the person. So
I learned this about Toby early on. I was really surprised because when we first became friends, I mean, Toby would do anything in public, just did not care, loved making people laugh. I mean, just over the top humor. But then when it came to like almost like social graces with other people, like there's a time when we were talking to a friend of ours. We weren't super tight with him, but he had a habit of lying a lot. And so I kind of called him out on a lie, and I made it awkward, and we walked away. I mean, Toby was pissed. Yeah. He's like, why did you do that? And I was like, well, he's just lying, man. I didn't really appreciate it. He's like, I know that he was lying, but you didn't have to do that. I mean, is that like an empathy that you have?
Yes, one. I mean, anytime somebody's lying, you know that they're doing it for a reason. It's kind of sad. And then two, I hate, like, if it's just going to be small talk anyway, I don't want it to get serious. That actually might mean I'm stuck longer. Like, I want to keep it just freely. Oh, yeah, okay, got to get out of here. All right. I don't want, as soon as they say something really serious, like, hey, you know what? Seriously, my mom died yesterday, and I just don't know what I'm doing. Then you can't get out of it.
What about the thing when some goofy stranger comes up and tries to talk to you and you don't want to talk to him? We could just collectively let him know. Not really interested in talking to
that you. Is empathy, because I feel terribly bad for somebody that would want to talk to me and I would act like a jerk. Now, sometimes I'm just tired and I just do, but I can't imagine if somebody comes up and talks to you, even if they're being drunk or jerky or stupid, for the most part, I feel like, dang it, this person.
But you take that role. My point only being that I know in that time, I'm not going to look like a jerk because Toby will intercede and take the person's focus.
If I'm not there, you have to do it.
If you and Bridget, you have to do that. Then I have to do it, exactly. Right. But what I'm suggesting to people that feel socially uncomfortable and try this as an experiment, tell yourself, it's not going to be me today. And see what happens. And you will see somebody that you hang around become uncomfortable that's normally not uncomfortable. If you simply don't let it be you. That's an experiment. I want people to try that. Tell me, am I right?
Well, I'll tell you the other thing that pisses me off is, y'all know I'm addicted to my phone, and I think I might even be addicted to Facebook, but I have seen...
Really?
The
second part surprises me.
Well, I say addicted because I just end up looking at it for no reason. Like, it's a waste of time.
How long? How long at a time?
Oh, probably like 3 minutes.
That's not an addiction.
But then, 10 minutes goes by, and I'll look for another 3 minutes. So
every 10 minutes, I
go back.
So 33 out of every 60.
Yeah,
that's 6 out of every 16 minutes.
Basically, I'm either looking at Facebook or drinking. Every 3 minutes off Facebook, 7 minutes drinking, 3 minutes back on Facebook.
You're
seven,
not addicted.
Not addicted. Oh, that's probably not. You're right. Not an addiction. But I saw it. I think 4 times last week. Where a dude either talking about his girlfriend or his fiance, and usually it's a wife, talking about how hot and how blessed he is that his wife's so good looking, all this stuff. I promise you, this is where I want to break and just go, yeah, you're right, man. My God, that ass.
Exactly.
That ass is
she,
awesome.
What a fine ass. My pastor's wife is smoking hot, finest ass in town. I agree with my pastor.
Her boobs are just oozing out.
Oh my Lord. Did you see her at church this Sunday?
We all agree with you, Pastor, about your wife.
I mean, why do people do that? What are you supposed to say? Well, Smiley face? There's no way to agree with somebody.
I'm certainly not going to like that shit.
What are you supposed to do?
When you mentioned this, I had just read a blog post from Barnabas Piper. If you haven't been to his blog, it's
awesome.
BarnabasPiper.com. But I'm just going to read 2 sentences because it fits exactly with what you're saying. He said, fellas, calling your wife hot to other people is awkward. We can't agree with you. That would be really weird. We can't disagree with you. That would be really mean.
I know. You're right.
Ignoring you is rude, but it's probably our best option in this case. Do you really want us trying to determine if your wife is, in fact, hot? I'm glad you think she's a 10. She should be, but calling attention to her hotness doesn't honor her as much as it creates an opportunity for others to judge, and it's just awkward.
I know.
Now, I'm going to have to go ahead and disagree with you there. She's a dog.
I know. Yeah. That's true. I didn't even think
maybe
about
if
that.
Maybe if she lost 25 pounds.
Like, 50 pounds ago, she might have been fine. Not now, sir. That's terrible.
Yeah. That same person that says that, oh, my wife is so hot, they would not say, hey, do you guys think that she's hot? Like, they wouldn't express it that way because they don't want the two-way conversation. So it just puts everybody in a weird
place. It's a deeper problem that I don't like in it, and in that it's the opposite of being vulnerable or actually entertaining, too. So, I mean, for instance, on this show, whenever my wife comes up, I almost entirely let it be negative because that's at least interesting.
You're an asshole.
It's probably no, I'm not. I'm just saying that's okay with me because what am I going to sit here and say? Actually, you know, if we're going to talk about my wife, I have to make sure everybody knows that this, and that. I'm more confident than that, to tell you the truth.
Right.
And anything that might be a flaw in my marriage or my wife or me, well, at least that's interesting. And think about Louis C.K. I mean, I'm not a comedian or anything, but I mean, stand-up comedians have always told the truth about their marriages, and I've always thought that was respectable in a way. You know what I mean? Like Rodney Dangerfield. You know, I mean, I know that they're exaggerating it, and maybe I am guilty of the same thing, but at least that points to some truth in a way that's entertaining and good. And when somebody's just talking about how good or careful it is, that to me it's either insecure. And it's at least not even valuable or entertaining or helpful to me to hear.
Do that.
So I kind of think the opposite is the way you ought to act about it.
At Christian conferences, I cannot tell you how many pastors point out their smoking hot wife on the front row. Like that's the terminology, smoking hot. It's not just hot anymore. Yeah. It's smoking hot.
It's too much. I mean, do you applaud? It's silly and dumb. And Matt, I think you're right. I mean, for sure.
It's just poor communication, poor leadership or something to me.
Yeah, but I mean,
it's just dumb.
Hey,
seriously, both your wives have great asses.
Thanks,
love you,
dude.
Your
wife's rack is amazing.
Hey, guys, I'm your brother in Christ. Man, your wife's bodies are banging. love you in Christ.
Hey, speaking of wives, Matt, Toby, and I had, or I'm saying Matt, comma, Toby and I had kind of a guy moment. Toby told me something at work. It was a really big deal, and it would be something that I would naturally tell my wife. And so Toby said, hey, did you tell Priscilla what I told you? And we won't get into that right now. It's for another episode. But I was kind of embarrassed because Toby and his family is really important to me. But I was like, no. And then I was like, well, I might as well just tell him. I said, well, I didn't because I got home really late and I didn't want to tell my wife this at 10:30 because then she'd want to talk about it for about 45 minutes to an hour. And I just didn't want to do it. You know what Toby does? He puts out his fist for a fist bump because he totally understood. He was like, oh, yeah, totally.
100%. There's some things you cannot at a certain time of day. Like you better not talk to. Not get into a female with a certain type of conversation or you better be in for the long haul because they're going to talk.
I'd imagine you don't have that problem with your wife at night because she's so regimented. But I mean, Priscilla will seriously start
by night
conversations at 11:15. I'm like, I cannot do this. And then I feel like angry, but I can't express anger and because it's about something super important. So it's just like,
what's really funny is I have been there not late at night, but with Jess or whatever. And if I reveal anything, like I just don't want to talk this much about it, then that's completely gone. Then it moves on to anger. I'm an asshole. Why? I listen to all the stuff. You understand? You're talking about your podcast. You can't listen to me talk about this one person at work. I can't believe or whatever. You know,
I try to get sex late at night. You know, right. Hypocrite.
Yeah. Oh, you don't want to listen to what I have to say, but you want to get on top of me? Okay, cool.
For Toby, that cutoff.
She's right. She nailed it. She's right.
For Toby, sure. That late night cutoff time is about 4:45. Oh. That's the real problem.
When I got there's been a few nights in the last 2 weeks where I've gone to bed at 6:30 p.m. That's the truth.
Do not ask me for sex after 5 p.m. You know that, Toby.
Matt, is there a time to honor your wife? Like, is there a time that makes her feel good for you to express public positivity about her?
Absolutely. But guess what? It won't be an add-on to whatever it was I was talking about, which is what it always is.
Right. Right.
It's of course appropriate for me to talk about my wife when that's what I'm trying to talk about. But when I have to give a disclaimer before I say something true or try to add it on here or get brownie points or make myself look better in casually for no purpose, then no, I find that stupid.
So speaking of our wives, my wife basically helped save my life this week.
Really?
Yep. So we are putting our house on the market. I wanted to kill some weeds underneath. You know, we have a bunch of mulch and there's some weeds that are growing. So I got this. We have this stuff, weed killer, right? And I take the approach basically like Matt does everything. Most stuff ain't going to kill you. It's not a big deal. Whatever. I didn't even think about it. I walk out barefooted in t-shirt, shorts, and just start dumping this stuff everywhere. And then you have to attach it to the hose, right? And then it wasn't working that good. So I just unscrewed it. And then a bunch of it poured all over my hands and arms and
was it Roundup?
Well, I'll tell you that in a minute. So, okay. So I was like, huh, that did just get on my hands. Man, I should look at the instructions. I peeled back the instructions on the back, and the label said, if this gets skin contact, wash your hands immediately. And so I was like, oh, okay. So I went in there and washed my hands and everything. Okay. Went back outside. Thought it was fine. Looked at it again. It said, wash your hands or wash the skin that got touched. Immediately for 15 to 20 minutes and call poison control. And I was like, oh my God. And so I started freaking out. I was like, no, but this can't be a big deal. In my mind, I'm going, this can't be a big deal, but why would it say 15, 20 minutes? That seems serious. So I ran in and then I was like, oh no, it's on my feet too. So I got in my sink, in the kitchen sink with my hands and feet in the sink, leaned over and I said, Jess, call poison control. They said to call poison. She got poison control on there. She said, okay, the lady's asking what it's called.
I don't know what I would have done if I walked into your house.
I know,
and I
just
saw
me
hands
in
and feet in
the
sink.
And I was yelling at the kids, stay away. They were coming.
I would have been
daddy?
Like, it's a midlife crisis. You've lost
it. Yeah. I mean, I was mad at my kid. I was like, I don't want you to get hurt. I mean, and I watched this stuff, and I was like, I feel like it's burning. Oh, no, I think it might be burning. And I was like, is it in my brain in this moment? I lost all rationale and thought it was seeping into my skin, headed towards my brain and my heart.
Yeah, you're right. You handle it just like I would.
No, I'm just saying, that is that scared something that happened to me later after we had kids where I started second-guessing myself like an idiot. So anyway, Jess calls. She says, hey, what is it called? And in my mind, I promise, I saw it on there, and I said, Jess, the stuff is called DEFCON. it's called DEFCON. And she goes, and tells the lady, and the lady goes, I don't think it's called DEFCON. And she said, can you look at that? So Jess ran outside, looked at it, and it was Weed Be Gone. It was Ortho Weed Be Gone. And I swore it's DEFCON. And then the lady said, oh, it's okay. I mean, it just might irritate the skin a little bit, but it's not even a big deal. Don't you know, you
might get a rash.
You're totally
chill
fine.
Out.
It's not going to.
You can get out of the sink.
Right? It's
sir.
Not going to seep into your skin or anything like that. It's totally fine. No big deal. And then we hung up. And then my wife looks at me and just dies laughing and just starts repeating the word DEFCON over and over. I was so scared that I immediately went to the worst thing that you could call. DEFCON 5. Somehow I ordered something not over the counter to kill these weeds. It's DEFCON. It's over for anything. Anything touches it, it dies.
You were thinking it wasn't necessarily weed killer, but it might actually be just human killer. It goes to brains and kills humans.
I thought somehow I got something guaranteed. Illegal, and it would annihilate anything living upon contact.
Well, my principle on most stuff like that is it's always act, you know, products, those products have lawyers, and they know about lawsuits and stuff. And so you got to think, what do the dumbest people do with this?
Yeah. You're right.
They get it on their skin. It just that's the way. It's got to be getting on people's skin. So I'll get less on it than the dumb people that don't even read the label or care at all. I know I'll be fine because if they weren't fine, you would hear about it and there'd be lawsuits and it wouldn't be that way anymore.
Dude, I was. Did you see Matt's big grin?
He's happy.
That's funny. I love Toby's feet in the sink. That's hilarious. Bathtub, sink.
I can't believe how much.
Why not bathtub?
Yeah, seriously.
Because I was already using the sink. I just hopped up on the counter and threw my feet in. Cause I thought about them too late. I was like, oh, no, it's in my feet.
Was it a pretty, pretty swift move?
It was really quick. Nice. And then I was worried that maybe I'd track some in and I didn't want the kids to go near. I literally went to just idiot zone. Just total 100% idiot zone. And it made me realize, too, like, I there is no way, like, I think we were talking about while we were in Salt Lake City this last time, but like, I used to think I could pass a lie detector test. I cannot. I would be busted immediately. Like, I panic zone, no matter what, my heart would start racing. I mean, any lie I told, I would give it away. There is no way, like, I don't go into panic when something like that happens for something. It's just so stupid. I don't know how to calm myself down and go,
what is
think
the point
rationally.
Of that? Like, yes, irrational, but I'm wondering what is even like the natural. Like, so somebody like me is pretty well adapted for emergencies because I stay rational typically, but, and that has an advantage. The downside being that, probably engage in more dangerous activities than other people do, or I'm less careful than other people. But what is the positive side of being irrational?
Well, I think
there's got to be, it's like a quick action maybe or something. Well, like reactiveness.
Yeah, I would do
it. Good.
I probably would handle a real situation the same way. Like, I would get there and what if it was bad or I was on
That's
fire
true.
Or something, I might be quicker to do that. Like, I'd notice it sooner or do something. So it probably is some kind of stay alive mechanism.
Is there a benefit to irrationality, or maybe irrationality is a byproduct of, you know, taking action immediately without calculating everything? I don't know.
Yeah,
interesting.
I mean, don't you think that might would help me? Like, you would be calculating in a fight if somebody was like, you start thinking what of all the options and how to get out of it. I might would immediately just start swinging and going insane or something.
Sure. So if I was in a fist fight, I would have to write it down on paper like that chicken does when they play croquet on Looney Tunes.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, I'd be getting hit in the face. But if I had time to write down the physics of it, maybe I would be able to land the right punch.
I hate when I act so stupid, though, and it's just frustrating. But that, I mean, that's the way it goes. So anyway, y'all want to take a break?
Yeah, let's take a break and start talking about that audio feed and talk to Jay Newman. Now, Jay was, I'm sure we'll introduce him when we get back from break, but just to save having to do it in front of him, Jay Newman tour managed us one time. He was a substitute tour manager for Lunsford. What was it Lunsford had to do? He had to leave tour to go do something.
I don't remember. Met a wedding or something.
And then it might have been something for his wedding. And then also, Jay Newman did Lunsford's wedding.
Right.
He was the priest or Pat. What do you call a person that does a wedding, Joey?
Pastor?
I mean,
the minister?
I don't know if you. Minister? But what if you just are certified to do weddings and you're none of those things?
Justice of the peace?
I don't know.
Let's bring it on and ask
what you call it. Officiator of Lunsford's wedding. Anyway, be right back with Jay Newman.
All right, guys. I blew it. Our good friends at Score Big could have hooked me up, and I lazily messed up. I wanted to go see Chris Stapleton coming here to Charleston, South Carolina, mm-hmm. and I was too late, and it sold out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and what sucks is I could have got a, just the most killer deal, but it is so sold out that it's nowhere, and all I had to do literally was go to scorebig.com just a week earlier, and I would have nailed it.
Yep.
I would have nailed it, so I feel so stupid because our good friends at Score Big have just the best prices, too.
Yep.
I would have got to go to the show at the best price of anybody, and there I sit looking on the internet, sold out, and I'm just being stupid.
Now you have to pay hundreds and hundreds of dollars to a scalper.
Right. Now you know next time you see a price on Score Big, you get it right away because that's the lowest price you can find.
Yeah, totally. You guys are paying too much for tickets between all the markups and the last-minute convenience charges and even print-at-home fees. You end up paying, seriously, court-side prices for the nosebleed seats. And that's just too much money. Score Big is here to change that.
It should piss you off.
Joey, did you know that 40% of all live event tickets go unsold? And did you know that there's a place to get these seats at huge savings?
Yeah, it's Score Big.
Yeah, you're right. Score Big works directly with your favorite teams and artists to get their unsold seats at unpublished prices. Only with Score Big can you name a ticket price and be guaranteed to pay below box office up to 60% off. Mm-hmm. So here's what you got to do. One, go to scorebig.com or download the new Score Big app for your iPhone and find the event and seats you want. Two, make an offer with Score Big's name a ticket price feature. And three, get an instant answer and save up to 60% on your tickets.
Yeah, so this should be the first step every single time you want to go see a sporting event or a concert or anything. Your first step is check with Score Big.
Yeah, treat your family. Do it today. So no iPhone, no problem. Get $20 off online, too, at scorebig.com. So you can do it on your phone. You can do it on the website, whatever it is. The easiest way is download the Score Big app for your iPhone, though, and enter promo code BADCHRISTIAN at checkout, and you'll save an extra $20 off your first ticket purchase. Scorebig.com, promo code BADCHRISTIAN.
So, Matt, the other day I was thinking, you know, you talked about how you lost Reggie, so I wanted to try it with Maybell.
Oh, you put the tracker on your dog, too?
I want to put tracker to the test. Basically, I was out in this big, there's a giant field near my house, and I was like, I'm going to attach this to her collar and just see, like, I'm going to let her go, and I'm going to kind of close my eyes and just see if I can find her without really looking, you know what I mean? I was kind of like looking up in the air and just following the beats. I said, sure enough, found my dog, man. It works so good. Tracker is awesome.
Yeah, it is. I mean, basically, you download the app onto your phone, you pair the tracking device. It is unbelievably simple. I know a lot of times we avoid buying technological gadgets because we think it's going to be complicated and hard to do. I mean, this is so easy. And my gosh, we waste so much daggum time looking for things. Let that be something that's in the past.
Yeah. And if you lose your phone, press the button on Tracker and your phone rings, even when it's on silent. With over 1.5 million devices, Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost items show up on a map, even if it's miles away. Never lose anything again with Tracker.
Yeah. Everybody take a second and just think about it. What is the thing that would be most devastating if you lost? What would be the top three things? Well, it does not cost you much. It's very simple. It will both protect those things and save you time on things that maybe you just lose often that aren't that big of a deal. But there's lots of good applications for it. If you really think about it, if you had it in your camera bag, how about that? Anybody got a nice camera?
I sure do.
Put a tracker on the thing. There's just no reason not to do that.
Totally.
Listeners of this show get a special discount of 30% off your entire order. So go to the, spelled T-H-E, tracker.com and enter the promo code BADCHRISTIAN. Let me tell you one more time. Go to thetracker.com right now. Enter your promo code BADCHRISTIAN for 30% off your entire order and make losing things a thing of the past.
All right, Jay Newman, we have known you now for, good God, 30 years? Feels like forever. We were just talking about, we can't remember why we first met you, because you were our tour manager. Aaron Lunsford was our tour manager. He couldn't go, or he could only do like a week or something. And then why did he have to leave the tour? And that's how we met you.
Yeah. Remember? He was with his band As Cities Burn, and they were touring Europe.
Oh,
that's right.
Yeah. He had to split. So I took over.
Right. But my favorite memory of that was Jay, at least at the time, was anti alcohol entirely at the time, correct?
I was, yes.
Okay, so we'll get to that in a minute. But at the time, you were anti-alcohol, and Lunsford had instructed you to be a good tour manager. Job number one is take care of Emery's alcohol and ice, which is the number one rule of the tour manager. Make sure our cooler is stocked and whatever is ice. So we picked you up in the airport that night and got up the next morning. By the next morning, the next time I saw you, you had a shopping cart with. Do you remember what was on the shopping list that you had? It was coming from Costco.
Yeah, I do. I went to Sam's Club and I bought in bulk.
Sam's Club.
And I thought, oh, this is a good idea because I won't have to stop for alcohol as often. I'll just buy a lot now in bulk.
Yeah.
And that's really not how it turned out. You just drank more if I bought more.
Right? Drank faster. So, but it was it was one of the most glorious shopping carts I've ever seen in my entire
life. It was like bulk size of I was told the Mexican beers were a big thing, and then IPAs, and then
heck yeah.
I got like a 2-liter bottle of Maker's Mark, I think. yeah, I think.
There was liquor and it was hundreds of beers. Right. I mean, it was, do you know how much you spent? It was $200 or $300.
Yeah, it was a couple hundred bucks, yeah.
and we were so happy. I remember seeing you come across the parking lot. And what's hilarious is I remember this, Matt. You probably don't remember this. I didn't know Jay was doing that. So I had gone into the Walmart. You know, Walmart's always beside the Sam's Club. And I just bought like one or two 30 packs of like Bud Light or something like that. And yeah. So I already had like two 30,
like, well,
two
we got
30
the new
packs.
Guy. I better handle
and
the
most
beer.
Bands or people would be like, oh, man, he didn't have to do that. We were all hooting and hollering. We were so happy. I was like, heck yeah, I can't believe it. Is it really Christmas? This new guy rules. This new guy's awesome.
But at the time you were anti-alcohol, so I think that made it even sweeter.
That was the first time I'd ever purchased alcohol, actually. So believe that or not.
Really? Yeah. Well, so I want to talk about audio feed for sure and stuff, but let us in a little bit on it. This is an interesting transition. How does a Baptist guy, I think, right? How do you turn on to go your whole life, not ever purchase alcohol, to being a guy who's, you know, all whiskey and cigars these days? I'm serious.
Well, yeah, that frames it bad, I guess, a little bit. No, it's true. I
mean, you are smoking a cigar right now. I'm looking at it.
I am. It's true. I grew up Southern Baptist, but I was always kind of, you know, the rebellious guy in youth group. I mean, my dad was a pastor, so I think that is like required. I don't know. I never really personally had an issue with it. After studying scriptures and everything, and I was around it all the time, touring with bands, and, you know, you're in bars all the time, and you see people not necessarily abusing it, but, you know. But my personal story, my brother was an alcoholic, and so I was just super leery of, I was like, that, you know, that gene's probably in me, and I just, you know, need to get away from that. I don't even want to risk it, you know. And it, kind of the turning point for me was I kind of was like, well, I don't have an issue with it as far as like a sin kind of thing. And the only reason I'm not drinking is for fear of being an alcoholic. And, you know, I was like, really, the best way to approach that is to just not be afraid and just do it right, you know. And so I don't know, one day I just felt like I'd gotten to the point where I was cool with it. And my first sip of whiskey, I was like, oh, dang, I really like this. So, yeah, I became a whiskey drinker. I'm still not really into beer very much, just whiskey. And the cigar, I always thought smoking was cool, but I hate the smell of cigarettes. I hated the taste of cigarettes. I just thought it was cool. And then I moved to Nashville, and my pastor here in town owns a cigar shop. And so we would do like church things at the cigar lounge. And so I'm like, man, if I'm going to be around smelling like smoke anyway, I might as well try this out. And turns out I really like cigars too. And they're not super bad for your health. And they smell good. So yeah, that's in a nutshell.
So do you think of yourself now as kind of like a connoisseur of good whiskey and cigars? Is it like you try to go the upper echelon stuff?
I am. Yeah. One thing is, I think if you spend a lot on whiskey, you don't drink too much of it. You know, yeah. You're not just trying to get blitzed. You're enjoying it. And so, yeah, I do. I kind of do everything whole hog, which is probably why I was afraid of becoming an alcoholic. But I went all into it. And I think the first month that I decided, okay, I'm going to start drinking, I probably spent like $1,500 on different whiskeys, just trying different things out.
Well, we look, we pay our tour manager. Yeah. As well. So.
No, that's not how that happened. But
so you tour managed Emery, and then after tour managing us, you thought, "Hey, I gotta do more music stuff." Is that how'd you get in this audio feed stuff with this kick-ass festival?
I kind of backed into it. It wasn't ever anything that I planned out. I've been kind of a medium level show promoter in Arkansas for many years, and then I manage a guy named Sean Michelle, and he played at Cornerstone Festival one year. They booked him to play there, and I was trying to get him booked the next year at Cornerstone because we just love Cornerstone Festival, and I couldn't get him booked. And so I was a little bit angry at that because I really busted my tail trying to get him booked for that. But they do that thing called they used to do all those generator stages, you know?
Yeah.
So we started a generator stage, and mostly kind of as a out of spite, you know, we're like, we're going to run our own festival here. And it turned out to be really well liked by everyone at Cornerstone. And I think we did that thing the last 5 years of the festival, we ran a generator stage, and we kind of got a reputation. We had connections with some bigger bands. Norma Jean played on our stage one year. The festival didn't book them. And they're just like, hey, we're in the area. Can we come play your generator stage? And I'm like, yeah, totally. And I think Blindside was playing the main stage. Norma Jean was playing our stage. And they sent the main stage security over to our stage because there was like 10 times more people at our little generator stage than was at the main stage. And so anyway, we kind of built a little reputation. And then when Cornerstone went under, a lot of people were contacting me about, you know, keeping the thing going or whatever. I guess they felt like we ran it well. And we call it the Arkansas stage because initially we were just trying to highlight bands from where we were from, but it turned out to just be whoever. But so anyway, I was like thinking, yeah, I would like to do this, but it needs to work, you know. And there were a couple guys who had both pitched me some different ideas, and I thought neither one of them were a complete idea. But I was like, they didn't live far from there, they're up in Illinois. And I was like, you two meet, and if y'all feel the vibe and y'all think this is going to work, then I'm in. And so they did, and the three of us got together, and we started Audio Feed Festival and just kind of did it, kind of birthed out of the vibe of Cornerstone. We really liked, like, the family atmosphere, the, you know, see the same people every year, and it's kind of got that underground, authentic vibe to it. We wanted to keep that going, and then it worked, more or less, you know. So this summer will be our fourth year of doing it.
That's cool.
Nice.
Sweet.
Fourth year. That's crazy. So I got a bunch of questions in there. First of all, what happened to Cornerstone from your point of view? Somebody that liked it or whatever. Why did Cornerstone fail, or did it collapse?
Yeah, I have a lot of theories. A lot of them would be speculation. But I do know that they got overextended budget-wise, and I think they just kind of missed who their real crowd was.
Yeah.
I think they started targeting, mainstream kind of acts that they're paying, you know, just ginormous amounts for the guarantee, and then they didn't have the draw, and the ticket sales were down, and I think they were, the word on the street was they defaulted on some major artists who had some influence and things like that, so they just got into big debt, and I think the reason for that was they missed who their core crowd was, which was a little bit underground, artistic, minded kind of thing, you know. So
it was the standout festival that was not like any other Christian festival, and it really had that. And I don't know when it changed, but when we were first going there and first playing there,
how so, like just the indie feel of it?
Well, yeah, we heard stories about it for years and years and years, and it's all this stuff, and finally we get to go to it and we get to play and stuff like that, and it was a lot like what people had described, and it was like something I'd never seen before. It was cool, and it was big, but it was really big, but it was still very indie, and it was all these small tents and stuff, and I guess it was a main stage, but the first 2 years I went, I didn't even go down to the main stage because it was just some whatever, but that was not the core of what Cornerstone was, and you could even tell then that, man, some people were still like, dude, back in the 90s it was this or whatever kind of thing. So you knew it just had this rich history, and all the stories were small stuff, you know.
I went in 91.
Wow, that's amazing. And then even by the time we played in the late, when then we eventually, the first time I ever saw main stage at Cornerstone was when we played it. And when we played that, we flew in from Warped Tour. This would have been 2008 or no. I guess we played the 2006 even. I don't know when it was, but we played the main stage. But we flew in and went there and played the main stage and flew back out just to go do the gig and get paid. And it's like we weren't at Cornerstone, and it was just this big stage, and we were disconnected from everything too. And that's our fault too. But it just wasn't the same then. And then it seemed like they got more and more toward making it a large production and stuff like that. And at least I felt like we were disconnected. Maybe it's like our whole scene got bigger. Yeah. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe it was bands like us were always the small, big at Cornerstone, not big anywhere else. And then when August Burns Red and Under Oath and bands like us that are at Cornerstone, being the small bands, get big enough to where you got to go over to the main stage, well, you know, that maybe the transcendence of the whole genre kind of left them to deal with some stuff that didn't really work out. Maybe that's it.
Yeah, I think moving everybody to the main stage, like bands like us should always play tents. And that just had that when we first played, that was just so right. amazing. I remember seeing Zayo under a tent like at midnight. And it just, I mean, it was just unbelievable. That you don't get to see that. A main stage, you can go to any festival. But like those tents at Cornerstone were just so rad. And it was just, it felt like this is the craziest thing in the world could happen there. And it was so cool. And you would see some of the artists riding by on a golf cart right there. And just, I mean, it was just so awesome. I mean, all that whole feel and vibe was just great. Just great for sure. And then you're right. We moved to, you know, they moved bands like us and Under Oath and everybody to the main stage. And then that was, it felt like it just started dying out after that.
Yeah. And there's nothing worse than getting an extra long guitar cable because you're playing on a big right. stage. And you get a 30-foot long guitar cable to try to get, and you get so far away from your amp, and I'm still hundreds of feet short of being able to run that catwalk. That's a weird feeling, man.
Yeah, I walk.
Everything you're saying, though, is like audio feed. We want everything you're saying, and I think we've captured that vibe. Like, we just took the main stage out. So there's like everything yeah. you're saying, all the That's tents right. and everything like that, that it's that part of Cornerstone absent the main stage. And we kind of decided we were never going to do a main stage. We're never going to pursue like the big mainstream radio acts and things like that. So
there's really no reason to.
Yeah, you don't want to get any big or popular bands. So we'll just do improv. Yeah.
No, but even if you get bigger bands, they should play that stage too. That you'll never get to see a band play that way. Yeah. So that's so much better. That's so much better for sure. So I'm excited about it too. Now, this is, how far is it away from where Cornerstone was? Isn't it like 2 hours, something like that? So where is Urbana?
About 100 miles south of Chicago, where the University of Illinois is. So it's Champaign-Urbana. And it's like north central Illinois.
What made y'all decide there?
One of our guys lives there, and he's a local businessman, and he had some contacts, and we actually got just like a really good hookup for the fairgrounds there for our first 2 years. So budget-wise, it just made all the sense in the world to do it on the fairgrounds there, and that's where we're still holding it. And it's a really good facility for what we're doing. We actually one of the stage you guys will be on is actually indoor and air conditioning, so it's like a big warehouse.
Hell
so
yeah.
there are some amenities that we have that Cornerstone didn't have, like air conditioning and running water. And, you know, there's restaurants and hotels and stuff that are just, you know, walking distance. So
is it a lot of core people from Cornerstone that were there for the years that are going to this now?
It is. Yeah. And that was kind of our ambition was to get the word out and be like, hey, guys, this is your new home. So and I think a lot of people have really bought into it. And so, like, a lot of our core people are the people who are going to Cornerstone for years and years. And obviously, you know, we're not just staying stuck in that, but right. I think the people who like that like what we're doing too. So
sure. How is this thing funded? Just you and a couple other guys? How does that work?
Well, yeah, I mean, we have a couple private donors, and then ticket sales really is our main revenue source. We haven't really got to the size yet where we're very appealing to like major sponsors and things like that. So we're working on that. It's one of my main goals. But, you know, you have to have something to pitch to, you know, like Cornerstone Compassion International was one of their primary sponsors, you know. And we've had Compassion involved, but not as a major sponsor because, you know, we've got to get the attendance up to where it's appealing to them. Mm-hmm. So right now, we've got a couple private donors, but really ticket sales right now is our primary revenue.
There are so many bands and people that are going to be here. I'm looking at the lineup. It is crazy. Now, who is Josh Garrels? I've not heard of him.
He's kind of like he's like the new thing in the folky Derek Webb genre. He's in a lot of the noise trade stuff.
Oh, nice.
He's kind of in that genre, wouldn't you say? Unique voice.
He has a great voice. He mixes in some, I don't know if he would have, maybe some hip-hop vibes to it, but it's definitely like folk singer-songwriter kind of stuff. The interesting thing about Garrels is that he first kind of made a name for himself playing at the food court at Cornerstone. And so, like, he was a guy who just, you know, couldn't get booked or anything. He would just play. And, like, every year he'd be there until finally they booked him on one of the stages. And he started building a name for himself. And now, I mean, he does really well. He played here in Nashville a few months ago, and I went and heard him play. And it looked like it was probably a sellout show at Rocket Town, which is about 1,000 cap. So
that's great.
And so he and, you know, I've being Starbucks or something, you'll hear his music playing and things like that. So he's not the kind of artist. I don't think, as far as I know, he's never had a Christian radio single or anything like that. Like, they don't play him, but he's getting popular in other avenues. And like I said, people respond to it. So it's been really cool to see a guy like that, that you saw grinding it out years ago, just playing to a handful of people for no money, to packing out major theaters, you know what I mean? So, so we're super stoked to have him as one of our headliners this year.
It's a really cool lineup, because it's got everything. I'm kind of excited too. Even some of the older bands, like the Huntingtons. I was saying, like, we just heard about Joey the Jerk, the rapper.
Yeah,
they were just talking about it. I think that's really cool. It's a really eclectic group here. It's going to be a lot of fun. It seems like any kind of music that you like, some band will be there from that genre. So that's really awesome.
We try to be diverse, and we also really want to. All of us who are organizing this thing grew up in, I guess, Christian music, but didn't really like the mainstream. We're turned off by that, but really liked a lot of the underground, indie kind of stuff. And so we want to connect the people from who were doing it well back then to some of the young people who are up and coming and trying to do it now. So we're really passionate actually about connecting those two eras, you know? So they can, I would really love for Audio Feed to be a place like Cornerstone was, where new acts can break and start to build their fan base, which is a lot of the bands I loved made their name at Cornerstone. And we would provide that platform now for new band.
Well, I think it's real interesting all the way around, and I want to talk even a little bit more about how it's going to work. But with the, you know, what made you ask us or get this idea sorted out to actually do a Bad Christian Day? Good idea.
Oh, love it.
Way.
Just genius.
Yeah. Well,
but I believe it was your idea.
Yeah,
not mine,
no, it was.
So that's great.
Well, you know, I mean, I knew you guys, and I really like what you're doing with the podcast and everything. One of the things I've respected about you guys as a band is that you've kind of always plugged away at it, you know, which speaks to your reasons for doing it. There's passion behind it, you know. And, you know, I've kind of respected the way you guys do your business. And then there's also, like, the crowd that you guys are appealing to are our crowd. You know, I just felt like there's a real overlap between...
Is it alternative? Do you feel that way? It's like an alternative festival.
Yeah,
right?
That's kind of a 90s term. Do we still use that?
I just say alternative Christianity just because it makes a little sense.
Grunge. Grunge. Yeah, this is a grunge.
Grunge, yeah.
Lots of flannel and... it is. It would be maybe like a counter mainstream Christianity festival. So, when we get lumped in sometimes, and when people talk like, I don't want to say anything bad about some of the other festivals, but we try.
Well, I mean, it's not like Creation
Festival. Nothing like Creation.
It's not you know what I mean? It's not the same thing. Although they do sometimes have a fringe stage or an edge stage or a zinger stage or a wowsy bad guy stage.
And more power to them. They're reaching who they reach. That's just not that's not the vibe we're going for. So I would say we're probably the only Christian festival with like nationwide appeal that is filling that gap. You know, we're not hitting, like I said, I mean, Creation's going to target the bands that are on K-Love and that kind of stuff. And, you know, that's just not our vibe. So, how do you hear about artists who don't fit that, you know, used to be festivals and things like that. So that's why I say we're trying to fill that gap so that people can hear these new acts and people who are out there grinding it out in the road and doing a really good job. And they're not really connecting with the people who would love their music the most. And so, like I said, we want to be that place.
Well, it's an interesting way that we're doing it. I want to tell people how this works a little bit. We've been talking about this festival for a while, and we are having Bad Christian Day. And so what's interesting is we've come up with a way to do it that's different. Like when I asked you about your funding, this is why. We're taking a relatively low amount of money to do this, and we're partnering with you guys to help try to move and sell these tickets. And so that's why we made the website badchristianday.com. And I really think that's amazing that we could figure out a way to make it a partnership thing that we both are interested in the success of the festival this way, invest it instead of us just flying in to get a guarantee, because I like what you're doing. And unfortunately, Audio Feed is still not going to be big as we want it to be. And we'd love to be part of that and help it grow. For instance, we call it Bad Christian Day. We're going to do the podcast there. We're going to do Emory. We're going to do Emory Acoustic. And we were trying to figure out, just so I can explain this to you, we were trying to figure out if we could get like all Bad Christian music artists there. And we just can't.
Right.
We're just not able to do that. But I want to appeal to everybody. That's just financial. There's not enough money to do that right now. But I want to appeal to everybody and say, come to Audio Feed. Let's build it. We're going to continue to partner with this. We'll do it next year. We'll bring more of our artists. And if we can get enough attendance and enough people buy tickets through our link and do this right, we'll be able to make Bad Christian Day a fixture, assuming we're welcome. But I think if we sell tickets and our people come, then I think that will work out. And we'll be able to bring more and more Bad Christian artists, we could do a lot of stuff with it. So to me, I'm quite interested in it succeeding and growing because I think it'll be really fun.
I want to say the tickets are honestly cheap. I mean, for a 3-day fest, this is crazy. I mean, like general admission, $60. That's insane right now. I mean, you can get that. You can go to our website, badchristianday.com, and get them. But I mean, for a festival, that's almost seems like we're getting ripped off.
Is that what it is? $60 for the whole pass?
I mean, and you can even go to the gate and buy a 1-day pass if you want. But I mean, if you have lower money than that, but I mean, $60, that's like 6 lattes. That's nothing. Anybody can come and check out this festival, and it's going to be awesome. And just like Matt said, here's the thing I would like.
We'll be there too. We're not going to fly in and out to the stage. We're playing. We'll be there all day.
But I do like the idea of breaking new bands and hearing new bands and that vibe that Cornerstone had, recapturing that. It lost that, and now we're trying to get that back. And everybody that has ever went to Cornerstone knows what we're talking about. Like that feeling of, man, this is raw and this is real, and these bands are just playing their hearts out, and it's not about the lights or, anything. I mean, it's dusty, it's dirty, it's going to be crazy, all this stuff. And it's just going to be so much fun. What more could you want out of like your July 4th week or something like that? You know what I mean? Like go there. I think it starts July. What is the last? Is the first day June 30th? Right.
30th
it starts at the end of June. Ends like July 3rd, and so then you can just chill out on July 4th after just rocking your face off for like 3 days. So I really think everybody should do it. I don't see why you wouldn't.
Yeah, whatever country you live in, whatever mode of transportation,
any country's welcome. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
from any country.
Yeah,
as long as you can't immigrate
like illegally.
To come over to it or anything. There's still we have immigration.
No, but
laws,
we are well.
Yeah, if you're not one of the countries that we don't allow people from, then yeah, come on.
I guess you're right. What do we have like thousands of North Koreans?
Right, no North Koreans. Obviously, Middle Easterns not welcome. Right, Jay?
We accept Syrian refugees. To have them.
Hey, so which
these will do a discount pass?
Most Mexicans, you can't cross the border, but you can't come.
Jay,
sorry.
There's some names on there that I recognize that Toby and Matt would have no idea who they are. Like, how'd y'all get hooked up with Steve Hinalong? Like, are you a choir fan?
Yeah, absolutely. We had the choir play our first year, and Steve Hinalong did a songwriting workshop our first year. He's actually releasing a solo record right now, and
he's got to be like in his 50s easily, right?
Yeah, he's an older dude. Actually, I've gotten to know him a little bit, and really good dude, really great songwriter. He's going to do another songwriting workshop this year at the festival. For anybody who's has ambitions to be a songwriter, like, you can't do better than this guy. He's written hits his whole life. Probably the one most people know, he wrote God of Wonders, which probably a lot of people grew up singing in church. And he's just a real dude though. Like you would think a guy who writes worship hits like that, you might pigeonhole him a certain way and you'd probably be really wrong about Steve. He's a salt of the earth kind of guy. And we're super stoked to have him along with us this year.
Now
that's great. Are people camping out? Is
you can camp.
Situation?
We have open grounds that people can bring their camp set up. That's obviously a cheaper option. And to me, you really catch the vibe when you're just there on the grounds at all times. But you know, some people, you know, you got families and stuff, and maybe you don't want to do that. And there are hotels all over the area that, you know, just some of them are walking distance, but no more than a 5-minute drive from our grounds. So we try to satisfy both options there. So I'll be camping out there on the grounds, and I think the majority of our people come and bring a tent and that kind of thing. So, so that, I guess that's the cornerstone vibe, man. If you're not like there 24/7.
What's Preston Sprinkle and Jared Wilson going to be doing? They're preaching, giving lectures or what?
It would probably be more of a lecture format. Preston has become kind of our scholar in residence. He's basically agreed to just come every year. And whatever hot button hornet's nest he wants to stir up, we let him do it. So he likes to find the most controversial topics and write a book on them and come talk about them.
That's awesome.
So, and then Jared Wilson, he's a guy I recently met and really like what he's doing. He kind of came up in the kind of Christian hardcore, screamo, whatever you want to call it kind of thing. And got into writing and blogging and
yeah, Toby talked a bunch of shit about him when we first started, and then he heard about it, and then we brought him on.
Yeah, he was on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, no, he's a solid.
Yeah, we consider
dude,
him a friend. Sure,
he's a good guy. We're super glad to have him on board this year. That's one of the things that I feel like we probably are trying to do better than Cornerstone and better than a lot of these other music fests is we want to have some quality speakers. And so we have Preston, like I said, every year. And then we just target some other people that I think are really kind of got some really good stuff to say. People have published books. And so, I mean, we put them on the flyer and, you know, they're not like an afterthought for us. You know, we're really glad to have our speakers be involved with what we're doing too. So those are our two this year, Jared Wilson and Preston Sprinkle.
I think one thing too, everybody should know is that Emery is going to be playing The Question from front to back with Devin. And this is the only time you're going to be able to see Devin perform our album front to back. I don't think we'll ever do this. Right. He was not able to go on The Question reunion tour. So this is the one time where you'll be able to see Devin perform this whole album and all his songs. We're going to play the whole thing front to back. We didn't do some of the songs on the tour just because Devin. We got to practice now, don't we? But
oh crap, that means we're gonna have to practice.
But it's gonna be cool. So you definitely 100%. We're gonna be playing this album, or will we be playing it from front to back or not?
Yeah, if we can pull it off, I mean, we're gonna try. We got to figure out how to practice the songs, but yeah, we'll do it. It'll be fun. I think we'll do it. No, let's do it.
Can you, Matt, can you pre-record the bass parts for me? All right, moving on.
Yes, I'm on it. Don't worry.
All right, well, we are, in case you can't tell, we're super excited about Audio Feed Festival. Once again, it's June 30th through July 3rd. Right, Jay? You can get tickets right now.
BadChristianDay.com.
Yep, sure can. And so let's, you guys carefully keep this going with fun and truth and move on to some news here.
Yeah, Jay, you want to do the news?
Jay, you join us for the news?
Sure. I don't know what that means, but I'm on board.
Did your family they ostracize you from, since now you're into rock music and nice whiskey and cigars? Like, are they all still Baptist and like think that you got like possessed by the devil?
A little bit. I'm backslidden. I think my mom thinks that I might be struggling in my relationship with the Lord, but it's okay. We've kind of worked it out.
You have worked it out. Well, yeah. Hey,
we just don't talk about it. So.
Right. I think that's what you got to do. My family has not heard at all this podcast. So, and I just want to keep it that way.
And my mom says she's afraid to listen.
She's afraid to listen. That's hilarious. That is too funny. All right, Matt, kick the music.
Rolling.
In a world where Audio Feed Festival, this time in July, will be the biggest festival in the history of the world, and everyone will be saved, and Jesus will return and play on walls.
And if you're not there, you're going to go
with
to hell
Emery. We'll probably still play walls. I know it's not on the question, but we'll probably still play walls with Jesus as he descends on stage. My name is Toby Morales, the damn news.
That got me excited, bruh.
I don't forget who I was talking about with this, with the podcast, where, but I mean, I think it was Robbie who said this. Jesus probably wasn't a good singer. I don't think he could, I don't think he was a good musician or anything, right? Like, he probably was he was average and everything. I don't think, he didn't get a solo or anything. He probably just did, you know what I mean? Like, they probably, put Jesus in the back when he tried to sing, Amazing Grace or something. I don't know. I just think that might be true.
Yeah, necessarily good singers. For instance, I always thought it was fun when we, at church, when we would do sound, you got all the mics going into the Pro Tools rig at Mars Hill. We'd record everything. And yeah. so we would capture our, you know, whatever it was the band was playing. But the also in that same system is the pastor's headset mic, you know. So we would yeah. always go. We had a particular pastor that was a really bad singer, but he sang. And so we would always go in the Pro Tools room during the service and then solo his mic with the band playing. And so he'd be the lead singer, what he was doing from, you know, just in his seat. But he had the headset mic on to go up after the service. And, you know, I don't think, yeah, most pastors aren't particularly gifted at singing.
That's
most
awesome.
Of the spiritual yeah. leaders.
Right. So there you go. Okay, this comes from the Daily News. This is my first story, and it's kind of sticking with religion and stuff. Sex toy washes up on Indonesian beach. Locals think it's an angel.
That's cool, making fun of Indonesians.
Oh, God. Indonesian villagers found a sex doll on a remote beach and somehow mistook it for an angel. Even the local news organization, Pojok Satu, was taken in. I probably said that wrong. Taken in by the inflatable deceiver, according to the Telegraph. This angel child also was found face down, crying and naked, covered only in a white cloth. They wrote of the doll. A fisherman found the sex toy in April and hauled it home to his house in Kuala Lumpur. I don't
know. Kuala Lumpur.
Yeah, I think you got that one exactly.
I think
right.
I nailed it.
Yeah, you got it.
Where villagers changed its clothes and gave it a new hijab every day. This is tough reading here. Rumors spread that the so-called angel was found in tears, and eventually the police got wind of the rumors and quickly dashed the villagers' dream of a divine discovery. It was checked by one of our team. And it was a sex toy. The find came just weeks after a solar eclipse, which seemed an auspicious time for angel finding. Apparently, it was even more auspicious time for sex toy finding. They have no interest, and they don't know what a sex toy is. So these people had never seen a sex toy before. There was a solar eclipse. Is that what it was? A solar eclipse or whatever the week before. And so they were like, this is it. The Lord has sent us an angel. And it's perfectly built. As all these crazy anatomically correct angel, and we have to worship it.
Did they not realize that's like, the angel was dead?
Eyes were open. It was smiling. It had a big O smile.
It's village, you know. It's villagers here, so they didn't have, you know, they may not have all the technologies and culture that the big cities do. You have to imagine it being a good equivalent would be in the mountains of West Virginia after the day after the blood moon, you know, a local man finds dildo and thinks there's some mystical connection to this mythical rod of power.
Right. Now, the weird thing is the picture looks very much like a kid. I don't know if it's like a weird, looks kind of creepy.
Ew,
I don't know.
Like a perverted
Maybe
sex toy.
I don't know. That's kind of weird. They do call it the angel child. That's weird. Well, that's the thing. You wouldn't immediately, like, these people are probably good people and Americans. Think about a bunch of frat dudes walking up, and they would go, oh, yeah, let's start having sex with this thing. These people are good people. They go, oh, man, it's holy. They think the best of this sex doll. They thought that it's an angel. It is so wonderful. Like, they think the best. Like, it just shows you their mentality is, like, good, nice, kind people. They put clothes on it. Yeah. They want to, like, put it in a place where people could see it and all this stuff. Like, we would just try to have sex with it.
Hey, you want to stick it in first for me?
Yeah.
We're pretty superstitious when you get down to it, especially when you tie it to stuff like the solar eclipse and the things we talk about, blood moons,
yeah.
stuff like that. And you wouldn't believe how many people literally find the face of Mother Mary in a marble formation and then take it on tour. There's a guy, I mean,
right.
The studio up here, Robert Lang's studio, that's kind of what the guy did. It's a studio where we did mix I'm Only a Man. This is a really cool studio. The Foo Fighters went there on that show, their HBO show, because they did their first record at that studio. And the guy was like digging out in his whole basement of his place and had this marble and found the piece of marble that's supposed to be the Mother Mary's face, but it just looks like a blob. And he talks about it and took it on tour and goes around the world showing it to people. It's just bizarre. It's just that stuff escapes me entirely.
Oh,
why we would.
Yeah.
Think that way.
Yeah, it just, that's the stuff that freaks me out, I guess, about religion is that's how, honestly, a religion starts, right? If nobody knew that that was a sex toy, did you ever see The Gods Must Be Crazy with the Coke bottle that the guy throws out the airplane? Did you ever see that movie?
Right.
It's such an awesome movie. It's like a 1970s film. And basically, this guy in a plane, he just throws out a Coke bottle out and it ends up landing and like hitting somebody or landing and they think it's a god and they have to get rid of it because bad stuff happens. And it's all basically how our minds go. And it does freak me out. Like if we
generations later, it's a whole thing. Yeah.
We think in our, like, that's the thing too, is like, we think, oh, how silly, these people are so stupid. The sex doll, they think it's an angel, but we think stuff is, we think stuff all the time. Like there's all the time people mm-hmm. thinking, oh, that light was a spaceship or that. I mean, we immediately go to conspiracy theories pretty easily. Like me, like
go to a baseball dugout right. in the eighth inning.
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. Totally. I mean, there's the most superstitious people in the world. So it's not like our education and stuff has made us that much different. Now it's just other things that spook us. I can't wait till there's like seriously like internet spooky stuff. And I get that. That's probably already happening, but there'll be something like that more and more for sure, I think. All right. Let me get to the next one. I want to do a sports one, if that's okay with you guys. I think that last one was New York Daily News. And this comes from Yahoo. And this one's about old Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods said he was getting closer, getting better, and that his golf game is coming along. Now, I wanted to read this because I used to be, honestly, a big Tiger Woods fan. Like, my dad always played golf, and I actually do kind of enjoy watching golf on TV, especially on Sunday afternoons when you can just, like, fall asleep while you're watching it. That and NASCAR is so awesome to watch on Sunday afternoon after church.
I know, I love Wimbledon.
Wow.
He says, I'm still trying to get stronger. I'm trying to get more pliable. He said Monday at the Congressional County Club for Quicken Loans National Media Day, I'm hitting the ball better. Everything about my game is coming around. Now it's just a matter of it being consistent. He took a few more questions and talked about his relationship with Jason Day. And then Woods took to the tee box to hit three shots from 102 yards as a part of a promotional stunt for charitable efforts. It didn't go well. Woods hit three shots from the tee on the 10th hole. And all of them went into the water.
Wow.
The first two on the fly, with the last one hitting the bank before rolling back down in the drink. It seemed like Woods was intent on hitting just one ball. However, after that went in the hazard, Woods seemed to hit a second out of pride. When that disappeared in the water, Woods said, that's enough for me, but then he hit a third.
That reminds me of the way that Toby plays video game football.
Yep.
Never punt.
I never punt, well, no matter what.
Let me ask y'all something about...
It's a matter of pride. Yeah.
Let me ask y'all something about golf. Is there a longer stint, or is the potential there for someone to have an advantage with age? Like, for example, Michael Jordan, when he played for the Wizards, he didn't have an advantage over the younger guys. But at that juncture in golf, given his higher level of experience, his age would not be a handicap in golf, right? Like, can't you be?
No, it's a total handicap.
Yeah,
he's been screwed by his. Yeah, he's particularly screwed, as a matter of fact, because he. So Tiger kind of changed the game when he first got into golf because he had a longer drive than the other pros because he's a more physical, more pure athlete than a lot of the guys. And he took training to a whole new level. Huh. And thus, he was able to, for instance, strategically aim for greens when other people weren't, from tee boxes on par four sometimes or with the second shots on par fives. He would be able to reach and go over the water. Golf courses are built specifically to make you have to go, like, lay up early
right.
on, as opposed to go for the green. But Tiger was able to break those rules, and as part of his dominance was the fact that he could get 20 yards reliably that other people could not get, and he could actually play the course to his advantage and evade things where other people would have to lay up. So, and he also was just a great golfer all the way around. And so that his whole game is built around that, and it kind of evaded some of the things of the golf course. And now that he has lost some length and some strength and stuff like that, it hurts him in a sense, because now he doesn't have it, and that's what his whole game was built around, not to mention his pride and ego, as it would be in this case.
Right.
He thought he could reach where somebody else couldn't, and he missed. So then instead of going short again, he tries two more times to hit it like he used to could.
To me, it's really crazy, too, because we're just watching somebody that literally was, for a while, the best you could be. Like, I mean, right. You couldn't. I mean, it's unbelievable. People thought he would go down no matter what as the greatest golfer ever. And then that whole stuff happened with his wife and cheating and sex scandals and stuff. And then he just kind of fell off the map, and he cannot get it back no matter what. And now he's like, he's like 40 something years old, and I don't know if he's going to come back. And it's really crazy, because he should still be young enough to definitely be competing for majors and be really good.
That was the point I was making. But a 40-year-old quarterback typically.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you got a 350-pound, 22-year-old lineman running after you, I mean, that's different than hitting a golf ball. But what Matt's saying is true. He should be able to compete, but he's not going to be as good as he was when he's 30, no matter what. I mean, you definitely lose some skills.
And it, yeah.
I mean,
and it's
sure.
mental too. I mean, the golf is a pretty mental
right,
game.
Right, total mental.
You know, it's like you freak yourself out, and it seems that that is really what, you know,
yeah.
got the best
and
of
see,
him.
And see, the old tiger, you saw the old tiger in the story of, no, I'm not going to quit. I'm going to keep hitting it. And then he just couldn't. So that only mentally hurts him worse. Like he thought that third shot, of course, is going to go in. I'm going to sink it and the crowd's going to go nuts. Wait a minute. I can't get it on the green. And so that's like 100 yards. That's nothing for Tiger Woods. Should be. So it's kind of sad. But all right, one more story real quick. And this comes from KTVZ.com and roving reporter Jeremy Davis. Former Bend developer admits being shot to collect disability. This comes from Portland, Oregon. A Bend developer convicted in a massive mortgage fraud scheme pleaded guilty Wednesday to additional federal charges after admitting he ordered his son to shoot him in the legs in an effort to collect on a disability insurance policy and delay his prison sentence. Shannon Eglund, 41, pleaded guilty in federal court to conspiracy to commit wire fraud and willful failure to pay child support. Eglund was vice president of the now-defunct Desert Sun Development Company, which orchestrated tens of millions of dollars in mortgage fraud during Central Oregon's real estate boom. A judge ordered him to federal prison to begin serving a 10-year sentence the day before he was to report he was wounded in a roadside shooting near Caldwell, Idaho. Eglund, who had moved to Idaho in 2013, told police he was hit in the head and shot in the legs after stopping to help a pregnant motorist in the middle of the night. It was later revealed the shooting was staged and he had directed his teenage son to shoot him with a 20-gauge shotgun.
Gee.
My gosh. Investigations are serious. I mean, anytime there's an investigation, it seems simple, like, well, they just ask questions and I can lie if I need to, but that's not how it works. Investigators, they know the questions to ask. They know how to ask it. They know what the follow-ups is. That stuff is so outlined. I was making an insurance claim today because stuff was stolen from my garage, and it was terrifying.
Yeah.
I didn't have all the details buttoned up, and she kept asking me these questions that I thought I didn't have good enough answers for. I'm like, my claim's going to be denied. Or I started thinking, am I lying? Am I cheating? Is that not true? You know, and it was if I was lying, I would be caught. I would get busted.
Right.
You just can't. It's not the same thing as saying I can lie to a person, an investigator, and a process there. And you, I mean, especially on disability, that one's so big. I mean, they investigate those kinds of things so well. Don't try to fool.
Yeah, I mean, it's something like that's going to come back to haunt you, and you're not going to get away with. Like at some point, they go, "Wait, he was shot in the legs. That seems kind of weird, strange. First off, why did this happen the day before he goes to jail? And then anytime there's extra people involved in the crime, one of them's going to talk. Like they probably got his son and just forced him to talk, and that's it. And now he's facing an extra 5 years tacked onto his 10 years. So I'm telling you guys, crime doesn't pay.
It does.
It just doesn't pay.
Take a bite out of it.
I mean, except for that one time that we'll say that for another podcast. But yeah, usually almost always crime doesn't pay.
Usually not.
Except for that one time. But I don't really want to talk about it. It, you know,
it set us for life.
I did. Kind of.
Yeah. One of the only times that crime pays is, like, for instance, if you're running a massive embezzlement scandal thing you want to do, you're running it through a Christian music festival.
Right.
That works almost every time.
Really good.
It's one of the best laundering outfits out there is a Christian music festival. Right, Jay?
Yep.
No count.
You heard that?
You can sell all kinds of, let's just say at this festival, there'll be angel dust. All right, that's the damn news. All right, we got it.
All right, thank you, Toby. Thank you, Jay. We're going to remind everybody again for the Bad Christian Day audio feed.
Heck yeah.
July 2nd is Bad Christian Day, but we'll be there most of that whole weekend, July 4th weekend.
Yeah.
Anything else from you, Jay?
Yeah, just go right now, badchristianday.com. Buy your tickets. It really helps me have more peace of mind if you'd buy your tickets now and not wait till the last minute.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We've had some people buy tickets already, but we would like to see more.
More and more and more.
Thanks for
more.
Doing this creative deal with us on figuring out how to do
this
it.
This is fun.
It's fun.
Yeah, so if you care about your brother Jay here and his
stress level and mental stability, get your tickets now.
That's
if you're
right.
a loving person. If you're a loving
Don't
person.
Don't go out and get a cheap whiskey. Let's buy your tickets now.
Yeah, you bastards.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see you in July in Illinois, just sweating and eating. Like, are y'all gonna have like cool food there, like, you know, carny food and stuff, like hot dogs?
Yeah, we got like the carnival vendor style kind of thing.
Yeah,
corn dogs and gyros and all that jazz.
What are you looking at me for?
I can't wait to see you stuffing your face with all that carny food.
It's going to be great.
Really sad.
Just kind of crying. Kind of sweating with a large Coke. All right. All right, Jay. Thanks, man, for joining us.
Yeah, good chatting with you guys. Thank you for having me.
See you, Jay.
See you, buddy.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Jabberjaw Podcast Network, jabberjawmedia.com. Shh.